covering all of your bases. Now that Jolene's presence in the labor room was confirmed, Mama Ginger started screeching.
I have a right to see my grandchildren born.
The entire pack flinched at once. I threw myself on top of Mama Ginger, both to keep her from launching herself toward Jolene's delivery room and to serve as a shield, just in case Jolene's relatives still held grudges about Mama Ginger's wedding-related sabotage. From the floor, I looked up to find a circle of emotionally high-strung werewolves glaring down at us. Mimi, I called, could you keep your family from, you know, committing public homicide? Come on, y'all, calm down, Mimi chided, rolling her eyes. My baby's having babies. I can't take time to bail your asses out of jail. The pack let out a collective huff and backed down. Because Mimi was the alpha female and they pretty much had to.
They're my grandbabies, Mama Ginger whined. I belong in that delivery room. I've been waiting Zeb's whole life for this. I have the right to be in there with him.
Mama Ginger tried to push up off the floor and I forced her back down. Please, Lord, don't let someone I know see me wallowing all over the hospital floor on top of Mama Ginger, or the cops, who would probably assume I was trying forcibly to drain her. No, you don't, Mama Ginger. Whoever's hoo-ha is on display, that's the person who decides who gets to be in the room. And Jolene didn't even ask her own mother to be in the room, so that should tell you something. Zeb will come and get us when they're good and ready to see us. Now just sit down and read a damn magazine. Mama Ginger flopped onto a couch and petulantly flipped through a year-old copy of Red Book. In the choice between sitting with Jolene's extended family, most of whom didn't like me much better than Mama Ginger, or with Mama Ginger herself, I chose to lean against the wall. This proved to be a good call, as I had to launch myself after Mama Ginger from time to time whenever she made a break for the delivery rooms. I could only fly tackle a 50-year-old woman so many times before I started losing my sense of humor. So I was grateful when my sensitive vampire ears picked up the sound of two strong cries down the hall. Chapter 15. The element of surprise is vastly overrated in any relationship. Love Bites, A Female Vampire's Guide to Less Destructive Relationships. Jolene had two perfectly healthy babies, in a perfectly normal delivery, in a perfectly normal hospital room. It was a McLean family first. After the inevitable squabble between Mimi and Mama Ginger over who held the babies first, Mama Ginger was lucky she lost the struggle and not, say, a finger, and the pack was allowed to sniff the babies to their heart's content, I finally made it back to Jolene's recovery room. An exhausted, beaming Zeb handed me a squirming pink bundle, and I fell in love. Little Janelyn, my namesake. The daughter I would never have. The baby I could love and spoil and then immediately hand back to her real mother. Now I knew how Aunt Jettie must have felt, to love a child so completely, to want to be a part of her life, even if you weren't a parent. When Zeb placed a sleeping baby Joe in my hands, it seemed like an embarrassment of riches. They're beautiful, I told Jolene, who was fighting hard not to doze off in her hospital bed. Jolene smiled, her contentment so complete that she didn't have to respond. My eyes pricked with hot, happy tears as Janelyn studied me with her big blue eyes. Her little hand crept out from under the blanket and wrapped around my finger. "Hello, little baby," I cooed. "I'm Auntie Jane. When your mama says it's okay, I'm going to take you guys to the library and museums and movies. I'll feed you food that'll make you hyper and nauseous, and then I'll bring you straight home. I'll help you hide your first tattoo. We're going to have a great time." "Nice," Jolene muttered, her mouth quirked into a tired smile. I snickered. I stroked a finger along the curve of Joe's downy soft cheek, and for a moment, I felt a keen sense of loss for not being able to have a baby of my own. Janelyn, who seemed incredibly strong for a newborn, even in my limited experience with babies, pulled my finger to her mouth. Chomp! The moment passed. "Ow!" I exclaimed. I gently pulled the baby's lip back to find a full set of perfect, tiny white teeth with particularly sharp-looking canines. "What the..." "It's a wolf thing," Zeb said, looking completely unperturbed by his babies having more teeth than their paternal grandfather. Jolene, whose eyes were still closed, raised her hand and waggled her finger at me.
Let that be a lesson on what happens when you plan on interfering with responsible parenting.
No biting the namesake, kid, I told the unrepentant infant. Especially when the namesake has fangs. Jolene yawned.
That just means she's happy to see you.
I hope she's never happy to see you when you're nursing, I muttered. Jolene opened her mouth to protest. If you launch into some story about the miracle of werewolf nipples, I will leave. Jolene rolled her eyes and snuggled into Zeb's side. He wrapped his arm around her and cleared his throat.
So, we wanted to talk to you about something. We wanted to wait until the babies were here safely because we didn't want to jinx ourselves.
I noted with pride how right it seemed now for Zeb to use the word we when it came to him and Jolene. And now he had two more little people to add to that unit. When he'd first found Jolene, it bothered me. I felt left out, abandoned. Zeb and I used to be a we. We were the we. But now Zeb had the we he was meant to have. And I had my own we with Gabriel. This was the way it was supposed to be, growing, changing, finding your own we. I really needed some sleep.
We would like you to be godmother to the twins, Zeb said. We've thought this over very carefully, and we can't imagine asking anyone else. So no pressure.
But I'm not all that religious, Zeb. You should probably appoint someone who, you know, hasn't been tossed out of their church for being an unholy monster to head the kid's spiritual development.
It's more of a guardianship thing, Zeb assured me. If anything ever happened to me or Jolene, we would want to know that you would be there for the kids. No one would take care of them like you, love them like you would.
And you're the least crazy person available for the job, the barely conscious Jolene added.
Well, that's sort of sad, I told them.
We know, Zeb admitted. Doesn't make it untrue.
I peered down at the sleeping bundles in my arms. The burden of their weight seemed just a little bit heavier. Could I accept this kind of responsibility? Despite working with children for most of my adult life, I'd never really taken care of any. I didn't have the kind of life that was conducive to child rearing. I slept all day. There was rarely solid food in my house. There were lots of pointy, breakable objects down at child eye level. I wanted to travel, to spend time with Gabriel, to run my shop. Was I really willing to turn all that upside down if something happened to Zeb and Jolene? Could I raise two kids? Baby Joe wrapped his little fingers around another of mine, mirroring his twin. I stared down at them. Yes, I could. I placed the babies on either side of Jolene and threw my arms around Zeb. I will do everything I can to give the kids the kind of childhood we never had, Zeb, I promised. Unconditional love, holidays without drunken nudity, and birthday parties where they don't end up crying. Of course, we'll have to go underground to get away from your families, but I'm sure Dick can forge the necessary paperwork. Zeb squeezed me back.
You know, when I pictured us having this conversation, I didn't think nudity and forgery would come into it.
I sighed heavily.
And you think you know me so well.
I basked in the new parent's happy glow for a few more minutes before I excused myself. I wanted to call Gabriel, to ask why he and Dick and Andrea hadn't made it down to the hospital yet. But when I walked out into the waiting room, Gabriel was waiting for me. I threw myself into his arms, giving him a smacking kiss on the lips. Hey, I've been wondering where you guys were. You finally dragged yourselves down here to see the babies? Gabriel's face was blank. Taut. He had that look in his eye, the I have bad news and I'm trying to think of a way to break it gently thing that always sent me into a panic. A nervous bubble of laughter escaped my throat even as it constricted.
Gabriel, what is it?
Gabriel swallowed hard, reaching out to take my hand.
It's Andrea.
What do you mean it's Andrea? Is she hurt? Did something happen? I babbled, panic racing through my chest. My brain reeled through a number of horrible scenarios. Car accident, robbery at the store, Halloween prank gone awry.
The last thing I said to her was, "Watch it or I'll drop a house on you." And she laughed. Oh, God, what if she was dead and those were my last words to her? Dick was at the store with her, and he went to run an errand right before closing. When he came back, Andrea was gone. Her car was missing, but the cash register was full, and Dick could smell. By now, tears were streaming down my cheeks. What? Gabriel, what's going on?
Dick could smell blood. Andrea's blood.
I don't remember much about Gabriel driving us to the shop. The darkened streets of downtown passed by in a blur as my mind raced. Where could Andrea be? I tried to convince myself that it was perfectly reasonable to think that she might have simply hurt herself at the shop, that she'd driven herself to get help. It was so much better than the alternative, that someone had taken Andrea, dragged her, bleeding, out of the shop in her silly pink ball gown. What if it was one of us? I'd been so stupid. I put her right in the line of fire, working in a vampire shop when her rare blood type called out to the undead like a fine, irresistible wine. I wiped at my eyes, knowing it was pointless to try to stop the tears from falling.
Dick called the police, Gabriel said, his voice bleak. He's waiting at the shop for them.
I moaned softly, leaning my head against the seat. For Dick to be willing to call the police, the situation had to be desperate. We would have been better off calling Barney Fife. Gabriel dropped me off at the shop. He thought his time would be better spent contacting the local council members and various underworld characters who might have information about Andrea. So far, I had a lot more faith that he might find her than in the combined forces of the Half Moon Hollow Police Department. To say that the police were not exactly concerned about finding a woman who worked in an occult shop and lived with her vampire boyfriend would be a grand understatement. Sergeant Russell Lane, whom I'd gone to school with for 13 years, seemed far more interested in treating us like suspects than in taking down any information about Andrea.
"Didn't your boss die under strange circumstances here last year?"
Sergeant Lane asked as he scribbled notes in his duty notebook. He looked at Dick and me with a gleam of distrust, even malice, in his eyes. I don't consider a 79-year-old man having a heart attack while moving heavy boxes to be strange, I said, struggling to keep calm. I was a giant, exposed, twitching nerve just standing there, waiting for news, trying to keep from flashing my fangs at Lane. Lane shrugged.
I just think it's kind of a weird coincidence that your boss dies in the store and a year later your employee disappears from the store,
he said, giving me a long, appraising look.
Andrea Byrne was a registered blood surrogate, wasn't she?
What does that have to do with anything? Dick growled.
And you would be?
Lane asked.
Dick Cheney. I live with Miss Byrne.
That name sounds familiar,
Lane said, scratching it in his little notebook for future reference.
So, let me get this straight. She lives with a vampire, works for a vampire, and spends her free time letting vampires feed from her.
Sergeant Lane closed his little notebook.
Well, we'll keep an eye out for her, but we can't do much until an official missing person report is filed.
I thought I was filing a missing person report. I know a person who is missing, and I'm reporting it to you, I said, placing a restraining hand on Dick when he took a menacing step toward the officer.
Look, she could have run out to the grocery store, for all you know, or gone to a costume party,
Lane said.
It's Halloween. It's a busy night for us. We're not going to be able to do much for you anyway. Why don't you wait 24 hours and come down to the department to file a report if she doesn't turn up?
But she could be anywhere, I cried. Look, my friends and family members have been abducted before. I know the signs when I see them.
I'm sure that being associated with you has its problems.
He ignored the enormous amount of stink eye I was sending his way.
But I can't do anything about a woman who just decided to flake out of work. Besides, she's a grown woman. If she wants to take off for a while, she can.
I opened a door into Sergeant Lane's brain and saw three things. One, he seemed to think that Dick and I had drained Andrea dry and stashed the body and were reporting her missing to cover our tracks. Two, If we had killed Andrea, or even if she was legitimately missing, he thought she probably got what she deserved. What could a girl expect when she hung out with this kind of crowd? He planned to go back to the station, make a joke about it at roll call, and forget Andrea ever existed. And three, he had been staring at my boobs through the entire interview. At this point, I've come to expect this of human men and realize that it has nothing to do with me. They want to see all women naked, except for their mothers. Andrea doesn't just flake out, I told him. This is completely out of character for her. If you think we did something to her, then take us to the station and question us so you can get that out of the way and you can start looking for her.
Well, I can't exactly hook you up to a lie detector when your heart doesn't beat now, can I?
Sergeant Lane pointed out. Pardon me for being blunt, but she's a missing, pretty young woman, I told him. We both know there's going to be a CNN van parked outside any minute, and I'm going to be more than happy to tell the nice reporters all about your lack of interest in finding my friend. Lane was smug now.
I think once they hear about Ms. Burns' background, they won't be all that surprised.
I growled. Is it uncomfortable to have your head jammed that far up your...
Jane,
Dick said, locking his fingers around my wrist to keep me in place.
You two have a happy Halloween now.
Lane sneered and ambled out of the shop. I let loose a stunning string of profanities and chucked the pewter fairies across the room, shattering one of the little table-side reading lamps. I expected Dick to be having the same reaction, but when I turned, he was sitting on the floor, rubbing a hand over his chest.
I can't take this, he said, his sea-green eyes round and wet. I can't take not knowing. What if she's hurt? What if she's scared? What if this is my fault? What if someone I made one of my stupid back-alley deals with came here and took her to get back at me? I shouldn't have left her alone. But I wanted to... It seemed so important to surprise her.
His hands shaking, Dick took a little blue velvet box out of his back pocket and opened it. Inside was a simple white gold band set with a little heart-shaped ruby. It was obviously old and worn, but had recently been cleaned.
I went to pick this up. I thought I'd go the whole traditional down-on-one-knee route. I thought she'd think it was funny, getting a proposal while she was all dressed up like a princess. When I got back, she was gone. She's my happy ever after, Jane, he said quietly. What am I going to do without her?
You won't have to worry about that, I told him. I was trying so hard to keep my voice upbeat, hopeful, that my throat seemed to burn. We'll find her. Dick's face crumpled in on itself for the briefest of moments. He sniffed and pushed to his feet.
I have to go somewhere. Do something, or I'm going to go crazy. You just stay here, okay? In case she calls or the police. Wait for me or Gabriel to call you. You call me if you hear anything. Got it?
I nodded. Dick. He kissed my forehead and disappeared out the shop door. Sitting at the counter staring at the phone was making me crazy. I needed to do something with my hands. I cleaned up the mess I'd made of the broken lamp and put the damaged fairies in my office. I wiped down shelves, restocked the coffee bar. I found a pile of unclaimed special orders under the counter with a note from Andrea. For Jane, reshelve using your crazy system. Caught between laughing and bursting into tears, I hauled the books to the shelves, replacing them in the stock one by one. Zombies, fact versus fiction. On the hunt for the Wendigo. Chupacabra and other demons of the Southern Hemisphere. And finally, rituals and love customs of the Ware. I ran a finger down the worn spine of the final title. Oh, crap, I sighed, thinking of the box of Mr. Wainwright's books I'd culled from my personal library all those months ago. With everything that was going on, I'd put them in my trunk and forgotten about them. I grabbed my keys and retrieved the box from Big Bertha, finally realizing how early it was when I saw the pink streaks of dawn creeping across the horizon. There was no time to make it home, and I didn't want to leave the shop at this point anyway. I wondered idly how sun-safe the storage room was, flipping through the book covers on my way back into the shop. I shelved Rituals and Love Customs of the Wear with our other copy and took The Spectrum of Vampirism over to the Special Collections display case. When he'd given it to me, Mr. Wainwright had said it was a particularly rare volume written by a respected Harvard academic, meaning that I felt even worse about leaving it in my trunk for so long. I carefully wiped off the cover with a soft cloth and unlocked the display case. The sheer violent force of the blow to my back sent me crashing into the case, splintering the glass. I landed with a thump on the carpet, razor-sharp shards jutting from my arms. One of them must have hit an artery because my blood was forming a rather large pool on the carpet. Ow.
So, you've had it the whole time?
An indignant voice above me growled. Through the gray haze of pain, I looked up and tried to focus on Emery's face. He sneered down at me, just as pasty as ever, but not quite as sweaty. In fact, there was a subtle radiance to his pale, round face. His eyes were no longer dusty brown, but a clear, liquid, amber color, and his teeth were brilliant white and pointy.
Shit, I shouted. Emery, who the hell was dumb enough to turn you into a vampire?
I tried to push up from the floor, but the itching torment of my skin expelling thousands of tiny glass slivers left my arms weak. I glared up at him. I knew that eventually the shock of Emery's betrayal would catch up with me, but for now, keeping up a sarcastic, condescending front seemed for the best.
My mistress, Janine, only granted me the gift a few short days ago. First, I had to prove I was worthy.
Emery sighed.
She found me. She showed me the truth about the world, about vampires. She gave me answers I'd been looking for all my life. She saved me, and she asked so little of me. And I failed.
Emery kicked out like a preschooler having a tantrum at Walmart. His foot caught me in the ribs, knocking me back against the counter. Dazed, I followed his line of sight to the book still clutched in my hand. Even through the sharp throb of pain, my brain spun. The break-in. Emery's overzealous interest in the inventory. His need to search through every single title. He'd been looking for one specific book all this time, and I'd had it in my trunk. If I hadn't been bleeding profusely, I might have laughed. You're an evil henchman, Emery? Seriously? You broke into the shop while I was out of town? Why would you do that? And why the big charade with arriving weeks later all scruffy and jet-lagged? I would have given you anything you asked for. Why are you doing this? I asked. I wasn't sure what made this situation worse, my stupidity or the choking regret over my stupidity. I'd felt sorry for this doorknob, guilty for not being nicer to him. And he'd been working for Janine since the moment I'd met him. He'd deceived us all, turned on his only family to help that crazy bitch terrorize me. I felt my fangs extend over my lips as I ground my teeth together. The anger felt good. It felt clear compared with a muzzy confusion of pain and worry. Emery smiled down at me. In a patient voice, he said,
I need that book, Jane. I need the Spectrum of Vampirism to restore Mistress Janine to her full health.
Anything except that. I spat, rising to my feet. Glass tinkled to the floor from my sleeves. Now, tell me where Andrea is. Emery shoved me back down onto the floor, which, given the woozy feeling in my head, was probably where I needed to be anyway. Still holding on to the book, I crawled behind the bar to the fridge. Emery followed, seemingly undisturbed by the blood trail I was leaving.
I'm a new man, Jane. Capable of things I never dreamed of,
he intoned with a faraway expression.
Mistress Janine touched me with her dark wisdom. I worship at her feet. I lick the ground where she treads.
I took three bottles of Faux Type O from the fridge and poured one after another down my throat. Wiping my mouth, I peered up at him. My vision was starting to clear. My wounds closed. I was able to flex my arms. My legs felt stronger. I was practically Popeye the freaking sailor. I hefted myself to my feet. Adolescence left deep, deep scars on you, didn't it? I think you need to meet this guy I went to school with. Name's Adam. I think you'd get along. The dreamy note vanished from Emery's face. He just realized his mistake, not taking the book from me immediately. Being so new, he didn't realize how quickly we recovered with the help of an infusion. He took a menacing step toward me. My hands tightened around the cover. I need that book. The mistress demands it. If I don't bring it to her, she'll plant her heel on my...
I do not want to hear about your sexcapades with crazy Janine, I told him.
Oh, no. I am not worthy of the mistress's attentions, he said in a hushed, reverent tone.
Then why do you keep calling her mistress?
Because she controls everything I do, he said. What I eat, when I sleep, how long I'm allowed to go without...
I get the picture, Emery. Please don't give me the details. And stop talking about her feet. It's icking me out.
I'm finally coming into my own, Jane, he growled. Do you know what it's like, living your whole life waiting for it to start? Knowing that there's something out there for you, something that will complete you, but not knowing what it is?
All I'm hearing is blah, blah, blah. I'm a Looney Tune enjoying my moment, I told him. Now tell me where Andrea is.
If you don't give me that book, Jane, I'm going to have to take it,
Emery said, drawing himself up before rushing at me. Fully charged from my bloody snack, I punched him in the forehead with all the force I had. And now that he'd lost the element of surprise, Emery wasn't that much of a fighter.
Ow!
He cried, collapsing in a heap on the floor. Emery, please don't do this. You're Mr. Wainwright's family. As much as I hate what you've done, I don't want to... Dang it! I sighed as he charged me again and I punched him in the forehead. Again. Stay down, Emery.
Give me that book,
Emery demanded. Hmm. No, I roared.
Jane, you leave me no choice.
Emery pulled a large wooden crucifix out of his jacket. I gave him an acidic smile. Sorry, I'm kind of at peace with the whole Christianity thing.
I thought you might say that.
Emery pressed the center of the crucifix, and a stake snicked out. He raised the stake and charged me again, and I punched him in the forehead. Again. Why aren't you learning from this? I grunted, staring down at Emery's crumpled body. I almost felt bad about the whole thing, right up until I got knocked unconscious. One minute, I was looking down at Emery, and the next, white-hot pain sliced through the back of my neck, paralyzing every muscle in my body. My legs folded under me, and I crashed to the floor, my breath wheezing out in a weak oof just before my eyelids slid shut. And for the record, yes, my own stun gun was used to incapacitate me. Chapter 16. Change is inevitable. It's necessary for the growth of a relationship. But most of the time, it just plain sucks. Love Bites, A Female Vampire's Guide to Less Destructive Relationships. When I came to, I was tied up in the basement of a very old home. My mouth tasted like old pennies, and the back of my neck was stinging like crazy. I sat up, but the swishing sensation in my head made me flop back to the stone floor. The ceiling above was solidly constructed and oddly familiar. I looked around, recognizing several of the old boxes and crates. Crap, I groaned. I'd been abducted and taken to River Oaks. This was just embarrassing. I made another attempt at sitting up, wincing at the raw hemp rope binding my wrists and ankles. Double crap. I leaned against a box of old Christmas decorations and squinted toward the low, small cellar window. It was dark outside. What time was it? Had I been out all day? Where was Emery? Where was Gabriel? He had to be frantic by now. Through the fuzzy sensations lingering in my head, I tried to remember if I kept anything down here that could cut through the ropes. I scanned the room for the outline of gardening tools or a saw. In the dark, I could make out the faint pink glow of a polyester Halloween costume. Andrea, I whispered at her prone form.
Andrea, are you okay? Please, answer me. Andrea.
Andrea was clothed, thank goodness, and lying on an old table of my grandpa's. Her clothes were stained with old blood. She looked as if she was sleeping, but there was no breath, no pulse that I could hear. She was so pale and small. My heart caught in my throat. The edges of my vision tinged a bright, angry crimson. Something was cutting into my lip. It took me a few seconds to recognize that it was my fangs, and the blood welling into my mouth was my own, stoking an already scorching hatred for Emery.
"I'm afraid our Andrea is indisposed,"
Emery said fondly, emerging from a corner to sit at Andrea's shoulders.
"She's so beautiful, like a princess in a fairy tale."
He chuckled, stroking her hair.
"Only the prince's kiss is what put her to sleep."
Emery's smile was sudden, sharp, and vicious.
"She was delicious, your Andrea. Well, she's my Andrea now."
"I'm going to kill you," I promised. Emery's cool, calm Lestat demeanor changed at my harsh tone.
"I did it for her,"
he hissed.
"For my mistress. To prove that I'm worthy of her dark gift."
He seemed to compose himself.
"To hurt you. Oh, how she loves to hurt you."
He smiled to himself.
"Andrea was my very first kill. It was so much easier than I thought it would be. After drinking that horrible bottled blood, it was a pleasure. You must know. You have to have tasted her, at least once. Giving her my own blood wasn't as easy, though. The mistress is right. It's quite exhausting."
"You turned her?" The division of my feelings tore a hole through my chest. Shock and horror that Andrea had been forced out of her human life. Relief that she wasn't entirely gone. Grief for Dick.
"The mistress promised her to me,"
he said, running his hand along her still white cheek. He smiled up at me.
"And she said I could have you as well. I have needs, Jane. Needs I have denied for far too long. And since I'm not worthy of the mistress's attentions..."
"Oh, just back up the crazy truck there, footboy. There will be no having. Got it?"
"You have such a unique way with words, Jane."
A soft, feminine voice chuckled in the darkness. Cindy, our latte-loving teen good-luck charm, stepped into the dim light. The green was washed out of her now dark hair. It was drawn back into a high Victorian style, oddly in sync with her ornately embroidered black skirt and white silk blouse. She wasn't wearing makeup, and her black nail polish had been removed. My instinct to protect the girl I'd grown so fond of jumped ahead of my logical thinking skills. "Cindy, get out of here," I cried. "You could get hurt." "Oh, for God's sake, you're one of them, aren't you?" She tisked and shook her head sympathetically.
"Poor Jane."
"I trusted you. I was nice to you. I gave you free coffee." She smiled and pinched my cheek.
"Yes, and it gave me time to watch you, to listen to you whine and complain to your friends when you thought I was reading. It's amazing what people will say when they think no one's listening. It made writing those letters so much easier."
"Wait a minute. You're Janine?" I gasped. "But I saw inside your head. You're a newborn." Janine took out a vial of re-wetting drops and moistened her eyes. She dabbed delicately with a lacy handkerchief. She flashed a simpering smile my way as Emery reverently lowered a red velvet ceremonial cape onto her shoulders.
"I'm a very talented actress. I could have been one of the great ladies of the theater if Grandmama had allowed me to pursue it. But theater people were barely better than circus folk at the time, you see. Really, you were disappointingly easy to fool. I knew you'd try to read my mind, so I came up with that story about poor little Cindy, the misunderstood, lonely newborn looking for a new place to belong. I let you see that much. I knew you wouldn't be able to turn me away. You never even suspected me. Of course, at the end of the day, I had to flush the toxins from your wretched coffee out of my system. But it was worth it.
I learned so much about you, Jane, and it helped me direct Emery in how to best instruct you.
Where exactly did you two meet up? Psychoticsingles.com? Janine's hand snaked out from under her cape, forcing the stun gun against my arm. The quick, metallic sting of the current locked my jaw muscles.
Ow!
I grunted.
There's no reason to be rude, Jane. I don't see why the two of us can't be friends, Janine said, smiling guilelessly. I mean, honestly, we have so much in common. A love of reading, complicated relationships with our mothers, loving the same men. With Gabriel as a sire, we're practically sisters. So, let's talk. The two of us. Just a couple of girlfriends.
I am not braiding your hair, I growled. In a cheerful voice, she said,
I'm just a good Catholic girl at heart, Jane. I'm very comfortable in churches, convents, monasteries. After Gabriel had so callously rejected my latest round of calls and letters, I traveled all the way to Guatemala to rest in a little seminary high in the Sierra Madre de Chiapas. And one day, I wandered into the chapel to find Emery.
She was an answer to my prayers. I thought she was an angel. He sighed.
My dark angel.
I think I just threw up a little bit in my mouth, I muttered, wincing when Janine gave me a light zap with the stun gun.
Emery was so eager to please,
she said, stroking her fingers along the curve of his face. He leaned into her caress like an adoring spaniel.
So considerate. He promised to do anything he could to restore my health, even when it meant bringing me the blood of every student in the seminary. Imagine my shock when I found out he was from Half Moon Hollow, the birthplace of my dear sire.
Emery told me about his uncle's bookshop, about a book he remembered from his boyhood, which described a ritual to revampirize an ailing immortal. She lifted the copy of The Spectrum of Vampirism, stained with my blood.
It was fate, you see? The book, Emery, Gabriel, all circling this silly little town. I wanted to leave immediately, but then he got a message from you, saying that his uncle had died. And he learned that you'd been given the store and all of its contents. That complicated matters for us. So, we waited, and we watched.
Her lip curled.
And I saw you with him, with my Gabriel. How could I help but reach out to him? You took my sire away. He stopped thinking about me when you came along.
I narrowed my eyes, thinking of all the stress she'd put Gabriel through. He stopped thinking about you a long time before that. I let out a loud, gah, when she shocked me again. Okay, I will admit that was not a constructive thing to say.
I don't suppose you've guessed what my special ability is, have you, Jane?
She preened, as if she hadn't just sent thousands of volts into my body.
You might call it having a one-track mind. If I focus on someone hard enough, I can find them anywhere. No matter where they are, no matter how hard they try to hide, I just have a knack for guessing where they'll turn up next.
Your special power is you're a supernaturally gifted stalker? I panted. Gabriel really did screw up by turning you. She ignored me, possibly because the stun gun still had to recharge after the last round.
I'll admit Gabriel's given me a challenge over the last few decades. He's become very skilled at keeping his plans vague, at bouncing between this horrible little shanty town and the rest of civilization. I was always guessing with him, but you, oh, Jane, you were very easy to follow. You were a considerable help to me while Gabriel dragged you from city to city, hotel to hotel. You were practically a homing beacon. I didn't even have to try, which was fortunate for me. I find travel to be so draining. It was all I could do to write those notes and leave them at your hotels before collapsing into a tea tree and eucalyptus bath. They're very restorative, you know. You might try it sometime, Jane.
You're looking a bit tired.
I'm not tired. I'm concussed. She chuckled, making calf eyes at Emery as he lit several oil hurricane lamps I'd kept in storage for power outages.
Meanwhile, Emery stayed here. He wasn't very happy with you either, Jane. You took over the store. You were handed everything his uncle had left in this world. He wanted to punish you. It's another interest we share. So, I let my Emery indulge his need for petty revenge. I helped him learn to guard his thoughts around you. I let him play his little games with you. I even fed him a few ideas. Rifling through your purse and finding that silly little can of vampire mace was particularly inspiring.
Suddenly, the disappearance of my mace made a lot more sense, though I had to wonder what sort of evil vampire ninja skills Janine had employed to get at my purse without anyone seeing. I grunted, wanting to smack myself on the forehead. I'd told her to help herself to coffee whenever she needed a refill. My purse was under the counter. No more trusting teenagers. Ever. I smiled nastily. Well, it backfired, because sending me a box full of silver is what brought Gabriel and me back together, so thanks for that. A black sneer flickered across her features before she forced them back into her mask of serene control. I waited for her to shock me again, but the sting didn't come. When I opened my eyes, Janine was holding the book in her hand, poring over whatever ritual she was convinced would turn her into a real girl.
"Are you sure this is the right book?"
she demanded as Emery cowered before her.
"Of course, mistress,"
he simpered. She growled.
"But there's hardly anything in here. There's no special ceremony for returning a vampire. Just a footnote about whether it's possible. The footnote says, highly unlikely."
Emery blanched at her tone, spluttering,
But I didn't make any guarantees, mistress. I said I vaguely remember reading something as a child."
"You said a little more than that, Emery. As I recall, you seemed sure you knew how to cure me. You promised."
She stamped her foot. I hissed out a hoarse laugh. "Emery is your go-to guy in this scenario? You're the worst nemesis I've ever had. Mama Ginger has better plotting skills."
"Emery,"
she said absent-mindedly. Emery reached out and backhanded me, his fingers striking my jaw with bone-buckling force.
"Ow."
As I stretched my aching jaw, I realized Janine was trying to prevent hurting me too badly. The stun gun was enough to keep me in line, but she didn't trust herself to really lash out. She needed me. And the only reason I could think of for keeping me alive would be to...
"Gabriel," I groaned.
"You want Gabriel here for whatever weirdo ritual you have planned. I've been relegated to bait. This is insulting."
"Don't be insulted, Jane,"
she said, her lip drawn up into a bewildered pout.
"It's a compliment, really. Gabriel cares for you. He's almost obsessed with your safety and happiness. As soon as he realizes you're not at the shop, he'll come running here, looking for you. And your predicament is just the incentive he needs to cooperate. Do you realize I've been trying to contact him for decades? But the first time he ever responded in any way was when I told him I was going to talk to you. To hurt you. Personally, I don't see the attraction."
Her rosebud features grew dark, petulant.
"It's not fair. He cared enough to turn you completely, to make sure you could take care of yourself, fend for yourself. He turned me into less. He made me into a ghoul."
"You are not a ghoul. You're a hypochondriac. You travel with a humidifier, for goodness sake." When a lightning-quick flash of insane fury crossed Janine's features, I had an idea. If there was no bait, there was no trap, no reason for Gabriel to be here. Janine would be left with no big evil plan. She wouldn't be able to hurt him. And with me gone, Jenny would finally get the house. Now that my life seemed to be finally, truly coming to a close, I found I didn't mind so much. Annoying her didn't seem so important now. It really sucked that I was reaching some level of emotional maturity moments before imminent death. I snickered loudly, making my voice as condescending and Courtney-like as possible. You don't even have the guts to come after me yourself. You had Footboy do your dirty work for you. Janine rolled her eyes but didn't respond. I dug deeper into the bitchy insult well, lowering my voice to a sly, sneering tone. You know, Gabriel told me all about your little crush on him when you were human, following him around like a little puppy dog, making a nuisance of yourself. I pointed out that not much has changed, since you're still doing pretty much the same thing, and we laughed. Did I mention we were lying in my bed, naked at the time? Janine's teeth ground together as she barked out, Emery! Emery turned and really walloped me. Unfortunately, he did it at just the right angle, so that my temple barreled into the corner of a china crate. I slumped to the ground, my head spinning, blood seeping through the neck of my sweatshirt. I was vaguely aware of my arms being pinned under my back, the ropes biting into my wrists. So, instead of dying to protect my beloved, I was going to wake up with a headache and a serious case of pins and needles in my arms. Overall, not my most well-thought-out plan. As unconsciousness tinged the edge of my vision, I glared up at Janine. I don't like you. Janine grinned, patting my cheek. I'm glad we've got that out in the open. From the dark, bottomless pit of oblivion, I heard shouting. I blinked a few times. I heard Dick's pained howl and his voice moaning, No, baby, no, over and over. When my eyes could focus, I saw him in the corner, Andrea's body pressed against his chest, his face buried in her neck. Gabriel's voice was louder, stern. Stay down, Emery. I sat up, wincing at the numbness in my arms. I shook my head, trying to fling away the last fuzzy spots in my head. Gabriel? I peered up, seeing Gabriel choking Emery against a wall as Janine stood nearby, wringing her hands. She looked so helpless and panicked. It seemed that faced with the object of her obsession and fury, our mutual sire, all of her high-flown evil plans had evaporated, and she was reduced to dithering like a flustered schoolgirl. I almost felt sorry for her, but not really. Gabriel dropped a barely conscious Emery at the sound of my hoarse whisper. Emery slumped against a stack of crates, toppling them over. I heard Janine gasp as one of the unlit hurricane lamps shattered near her feet, soaking her cloak in the lamp oil. Jane? He murmured, probing my temple gently with his fingertips. Between the barely healed cuts on my arms, the head wound, and the drying maroon blood soaked into my sweatshirt, I imagined I wouldn't be winning any beauty contests soon. Sadly, at this point, I think Gabriel was used to seeing me this way. I'm really sorry about this. Emery got me from behind, I groaned. That's not what it sounds like. Are you all right? He asked. Bored and annoyed. A little worried about Emery's mental state, but yeah, I'm fine, I grumbled, trying to push to my feet. Nope, I was wrong. My head really hurts. Come upstairs, he said, taking my arm and supporting my weight. Janine, I've called the council here. You've gone too far this time. When they see... Gabriel's voice broke as he took in the sight of Dick, huddled protectively over Andrea. There's nothing I can do to help you.
That's not true, Janine mewled. You and I have a long old debt to settle, Gabriel.
I don't owe you anything, he growled, pushing past her and dragging me with him.
All of this is your doing, your fault. You made me what I am.
The pitiful voice, the sight of Janine's twisted baby doll visage, were playing Gabriel's guilt strings like a virtuoso. I could see the conflict play out on his face. After everything, he wanted to try to find a way to help her. He turned, leaving me to stand as my sense of equilibrium returned.
I shouldn't have left you alone, Janine, he said, and I'm sorry for that. But I was afraid of you, afraid of the things you would do. I was ashamed of you. I thought that you would listen to Violette, that she could teach you.
She didn't teach me anything, Janine pouted. It was just more rules than my grandmama had. Don't feed from the weak, don't kill for the sake of killing,
she said, mimicking a heavy French accent.
It was so much worse than my life. You left me with that. I didn't have anyone to turn to. Please, just give me more of your blood. Make me whole. The council will understand that I was sick and not in my right mind, that I had no choice but to do what I've done, especially when you talk to them.
He took a deep breath. I won't do that, Janine. I won't speak for you, and I won't give you another drop of my blood. There's no such thing as a re-turning.
Yes, there is! Janine screamed.
Janine? He growled.
I cleared my throat. Gabriel, let's not antagonize the crazy with the stun gun.
Jane, don't help. Wait, she has your stun gun?
I shrugged my shoulders, my expression apologetic.
I can make you happy, Gabriel, if you just give me the chance. But now that you have her, you don't even think of me,
Janine begged, her voice reedy and desperate.
Can't you see what she's done to me by coming between us? I need you.
Oh, Lord, it was Gabriel's kryptonite, a lady in distress. But instead of reaching out to Janine, he simply shook his head.
I can't keep living like this,
Janine cried, real tears of blood streaming down her cheeks now.
I won't keep living this half-life. I want the gift of immortality, or no life at all.
I gave you the gift of immortality, Gabriel said, his voice cold now. And you've wasted it.
With a mad cry, Janine sparked the stun gun and moved it to the hem of her cloak.
I'll end it now. I'll take you all with me.
You won't do it. You're terrified of death, I told her. I thought reminding her of the immediate dusty consequences would make her drop the stun gun, but Janine seemed to take my words as a challenge. She sneered and pressed it down, the arc of electrical energy combusting the lamp oil-soaked cloth with a bright orange glow. Within seconds, her clothes were engulfed. Gabriel threw me behind him, but Janine stood perfectly still, a shocked look freezing her face in a mask of horrified regret, as if she couldn't believe what she had done in a toddler's fit of temper. Her panicked hands beat at the flames as they licked up her clothes toward her face. There was a horrible scream as Janine's body seemed to disintegrate before our eyes. Her face turned gray, then black, then crumbled into dust. The flaming cloak crumpled to the floor. I watched as the puddle of oil caught, the fire inching toward the piles of boxes and wooden crates. The flames speared higher and higher until I thought they might be brushing against the ceiling. We would be trapped. River Oaks would burn. The cellar was going to catch like a Roman candle if... I shrieked as a blue-white cloud exploded in my face. Dick was standing over Janine's remains with the fire extinguisher I kept near the cellar steps. With tears streaking down his deadened, inanimate face, he sprayed foam over the remaining hot spots, dropped the red tank with a clang, and shuffled back to Andrea without a word. The cold blast from the fire extinguisher seemed to revive Emery, who slowly pushed himself up from the floor. Gabriel sprang to his feet, putting himself between Emery and me.
Mistress,
Emery mumbled. His dull, unfocused eyes caught sight of the pile of ashes and the red cape, absorbing what it meant. He howled.
No! No!
Emery scanned the room for signs of Janine, for an explanation of what had happened. Seeing Dick crouched over Andrea, Emery cried,
That is my mate.
When he advanced on them, Dick looked up with what can only be called a predatory snarl and roared. Even I jumped back. Gabriel's grip tightened around my arm.
Emery, I think you should back away and sit still until the council gets here.
Gabriel seethed. Emery's brow furrowed, even as he circled Andrea, trying to find a weakness in Dick's defenses.
What council?
The Council for the Equal Treatment of the Undead. The governing body of vampires who are going to lower the boom on you after what you've done, I said. Emery snorted derisively.
We're vampires, Jane. We're above the law, the constraints of human society. There are no rules for us anymore. It's why I wanted to be a vampire in the first place.
Actually, there's a whole buttload of rules, Emery. The council has rules for everything, especially when it comes to abducting and forcibly turning humans. It's bad for our public image. All those months at the bookshop, and you never bothered reading anything, did you? You bought into Janine's promise of a dark gift without even thinking about it. And now, you're going to get the trial.
What's the trial?
Emery asked, his bravado suddenly gone. What you've done to Andrea is going to pale in comparison. As if on cue, Ophelia arrived at the top of the cellar with her council posse. Gaunt and grumpy Peter Crown, a Colonel Sanders lookalike improbably named Waco Marchand, and cool blonde Sophie. I was never so glad to see bureaucrats in all my life. It was like a pale, elegant cavalry. Emery had lost all nerve at this point and was cowering behind a junk pile. Ophelia, a 300-year-old teenager who was wearing skinny, dark-washed jeans and a Jonas Brother t-shirt, took in the sight of Andrea's crumpled body, the pile of ashes on the floor, and my bloodied, chainsaw massacre survivor look.
"What did you do this time, Jane?"
she demanded, rolling her eyes.
"This time it really wasn't me," I protested.
"You always say that," she pointed out.
"It was this newborn, Emery Mueller,"
Gabriel said, dragging Emery up by the collar and pushing him toward Peter.
"He kidnapped Andrea Byrne and turned her against her will. Under the direction of his sire, Janine, he also attempted to kill Jane with aerosol silver weeks ago, then assaulted and kidnapped her tonight."
"That's quite a rap sheet for a newborn," Ophelia said, nudging Janine's remains with her toe. Gabriel cleared his throat.
When he's able to speak, he will corroborate my story."
"I see," she said, mulling that over as she scraped the ashes from her hot pink Converse sneakers. "And I take it this is Janine?" Gabriel nodded curtly. "When I told you to take care of the matter, Gabriel, I didn't mean to set her on fire." I raised my hand for permission to speak. "Actually, she did that to herself."
"You've said that before, too,"
Ophelia noted. I groaned, hoping Ophelia wasn't going to sick Sophie on me. I'd just gotten over Sophie's brain-scraping brand of interrogation from our last encounter at a Cracker Barrel. Mr. Marchand nudged her with his elbow.
"She's never lied to us before, Ophelia. She's no good at it."
Ophelia sighed. "Fine. Emery Mueller, I hereby take you into the custody of this tribunal on the charge of forcibly creating a vampire. Your trial is scheduled in 2 days.
"Like a hearing?"
Emery whispered. He seemed caught between being terrified of Ophelia and wanting to kiss her feet. Peter smiled nastily.
"No."
Emery whimpered as Peter and Sophie dragged him away.
"I'd like to say I hope I don't see you for a while, Jane, but somehow I don't think it will work out that way,"
Ophelia said. "That seems fair," I grumbled. Ophelia cast a long glance at Dick, a puzzled expression marring her beautiful face.
"Let me know if you need help over the next few days."
With that, the council swept out of the room in silence. I honestly didn't care whether I ever saw Emery or Ophelia again. Gabriel and I slowly approached Dick. I laid a hand on his shoulder. Dick inhaled sharply, but he didn't snap at us when we gently pried Andrea away from him. Dick allowed Gabriel to carry Andrea upstairs to one of the guest rooms. I washed her neck and face, trying to remove any traces that Emery might have left behind. When she woke, I didn't want her to smell him. I cut the bloodied costume from her body and slipped a soft cotton nightgown over her head. Even though I knew I would be talking to her, laughing with her again soon, it still felt like funeral preparations. I went downstairs and found Dick and Gabriel in my kitchen, an open bottle of Faux Type O between them. I had to try to swallow the lump in my throat twice before I could manage.
"Dick, I'm sorry. It's my fault. I didn't even suspect Emery. I was so self-centered. I thought Janine was focused on me. It didn't occur to me that she would go after my friends like this."
Dick's voice was raw, a harsh whisper between sips.
"You couldn't have guessed, Jane. None of us did. We're going to lay blame at Emery's feet, where it belongs."
I was
dead drunk when I was turned,
Dick said quietly, staring into his glass.
I can't remember.